Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Amanda! 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 Amanda!
I can't stop.
From brief PT student to acquired brain injury survivor. That's right. In this episode, I'm talking to Amanda Salgado, fellow stroke survivor and Modus Nova user. Boom, intro done. Hi, I'm Joe.
And I'm Lauren.
And we are
the Neuro Nerds.
Yes, that was on time.
I feel pretty good about that. Welcome to the Neuro Nerds. Here's a running theme. Say it every week. Mean it every week. Very special episode. Special guest today, Miss Amanda Salgado. What's going on, Amanda? How are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for being on the podcast. I really appreciate it. And you know what? We're going to dive straight in. How are you part of this community, Amanda?
This would be about 2015, I was the first kind of blurb in realizing that that I'm more prone to blood clots. Mm-hmm. So I actually had my first blood clot back in 2015. Ooh. And I was on 3 months of blood thinners then, and it seemed to dissipate. So went off blood thinners and I was good till 2016, but then I ended up with a pulmonary embolism and a DVT in my left leg.
Okay. Well, that doesn't seem like a lot of fun.
Yeah. So went back to blood thinners on Xarelto. And I was on Xarelto since 2016 after the pulmonary embolism. Mm-hmm. And I ended up having the stroke last year in 2020 on February 26th. And I was on Xarelto still at the time I had the ischemic stroke. So is the stroke caused by blood clots when I was on blood thinners for a few years already?
That's crazy. How did they explain that to you? Like, why were you still clotting if you were on blood thinners?
That's a great question. One of the hematologists I had at the time, because I had a few hematologists over the years just for moving for school. And I moved to another city for a little while after school. And so I was kind of switching hematologists, but all of them would run the same couple of tests. And when tests would come back negative, they wouldn't really push further to try kind of figure out what was going on.
Right.
And so last year, whenever the stroke happened, the hematologist that I had at the time literally just told my mom, well, Xarelto failed her. And she's like, no kidding. I can tell that without having to have the hematologist degree.
That is a shocking thing to say. what was the name of the medication?
Xarelto.
Xarelto for 4 years?
Yeah, roughly.
And steadily. This is just something that you take every day.
Yeah, it was something I took every day.
And in the doctor's appointments that you've had since, there wasn't any issues with your blood clotting?
I mean, I switched blood thinners after the stroke because we were like, there's no way I'm going back on the same one.
the one that that didn't stop the clutch and the stroke from happening, that medication?
Exactly. And so I'm on Coumadin now, warfarin. It has two different names, I guess, for it. So they're essentially the same thing, but it has a blood test that I do each week that looks at like the thickness of my blood. It's called like an INR test. I don't know what it stands for, but I initially had to go to a lab each week to get it checked. But now I have a little machine that I can do it at home.
Oh, wait, does that mean that you have to stab yourself?
It's like a little finger prick. And then you put like a little blood drop on a little like test strip. It goes into the machine, et cetera. So my mom helps me do it every week.
Good. I would need somebody to help me do it because I can't inflict that type of pain myself.
It's nothing to me now, because when I had the first blood clot in 2015, they gave me Lovenox shots, which I had to take twice a day. So I had to do the injections twice a day to do the blood thinners in for 3 months.
Nope. Good. Nope. I couldn't do it. Amanda, I can't put eye drops in my own eyes, let alone shoot myself with a knee. I can't do it. Did you actually inject yourself, or did you have help injecting yourself? Oh, you're an insane person. Man, you're an insane person.
I had like a little V8 bottle in my like dorm room that I would put all the empty needles in so that I could turn them in where I needed to after. And I was like, oh, it's just my little like druggy bottle.
That's hilarious. We're like, oh yeah, there's Amanda. She's on heroin. That is so wild. And your blood for the last few years was like, it was good, I guess?
As far as I know, because that's one of like, downside with the Coumadin, I mean, one of the downsides is that, I have to do the blood test every week now. Right. But the result of this test gives me a little number between, well, up to like a 3.0 roughly, or a little over 3. And the doctors were saying, try to keep your range between 2.0 and 3.0, because that lower end of the range is saying that your blood's getting thicker. It gets to the higher end of the range, it's getting thinner. Mm-hmm. But based on where my results are at each week, the result gets sent through an app to my doctor and he adjusts my warfarin dosage based on how thin or thick the blood's getting.
That's pretty amazing though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit of a process, but it's interesting. But with the Xarelto I was taking, I didn't have a weekly test I had to do, which was kind of nice, but I also couldn't tell when it was getting thicker.
Yeah, it's just kind of a crapshoot. So have you noticed that he's had to adjust your medications frequently, or is it pretty steady?
We're still kind of figuring out a little bit of a balance. Like, we'll be good for a few weeks at a time, and then 1 week we'll change it. Or it's like here and there we change it, but it's never any like huge drastic change. It's just like add a couple milligrams a week or something like that, or take away a milligram or two or something like that.
Right. Is there a reason why your blood changes?
Part of it is with, I don't know why with the other blood thinners, this doesn't apparently sound, according to the hematologist, like it's a issue. But with the Coumadin and the warfarin, you have to be careful with the vitamin K intake you have in your food.
Okay.
So it's not that I can't have foods with vitamin K, which a lot of the like leafy green things, or things like avocado, lettuce, broccoli, kale, spinach, kind of, that's more of the main things that has vitamin K. Right. But it's not that I can't have those things. It's that I either have to cut it out of my diet or have it consistently each day, the amount that I have of vitamin K.
Wow.
Because so the vitamin literally kind K of have... on this blood thinner will thicken up my blood.
So you have to measure out your food and plan ahead. You can't just freestyle the amount of greens that you eat.
Pretty much. Unless you're really good at eyeballing it, I guess. but I don't know if that's a game I want to play.
Right. I'll have exactly 8 leaves of spinach. No, that's weird. That's very bizarre. But if you think about it, how amazing is it that you can take this medication and then you have a doctor that you don't even have to talk to? You just message. And then he'll just like, oh, we're just going to adjust this and then figure out, like, it's so crazy to me. Like, it doesn't make any sense, but it makes all sense in the world. Like, we kind of live in the future. Isn't that beautiful? And you don't have to give yourself shots anymore for the most part. I guess just your finger, which isn't bad.
Yeah.
When you were giving yourself shots, was it like in the arm, in the stomach? Like, I don't know. Where do you give yourself shots? Oh, no.
I know.
God, Amanda. Oh, God. I don't feel well.
I didn't choose the Lovenox initially. The hematologist who put me on it and put me on the Xarelto. Well, he gave me the options of the different blood thinners. He's like, here's some of the pros, here's some of the cons, make your choice. And then he's like, you probably won't want to do Lovenox though. He's like, at the time, 2015, 2016. I was going into my junior year of college. And so he's like, you're a young college student in California. You probably don't want, he's like, you're probably going to the beach a lot. You don't want to have little bruises all over your stomach probably all the time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah. Because you're literally stabbing yourself in the stomach. Oh, my God. That's wild. So when you had your stroke, where were you? Like, were you at home? Were you out and about?
Yeah, luckily I was at home because, I mean, I was going to school, but I was commuting to school. Mm-hmm. So luckily I only lived about maybe 20, 25 minutes from the school. So
that's perfect.
Because my mom asked me like what I remember from that morning and kind of early on in the hospital visit. Mm-hmm. And so I had a big test the day of this stroke that I was supposed to do, this really stressful, crazy test for my program I was in. And my mom knew I had the test in the morning. So when she saw I was in my room in the morning a little bit longer than I normally would have been there, she's like, oh, she's probably cramming last minute for the test. I'll give her a few more minutes. So she waited a couple more minutes and then she's like, she's still here. I should go check on her. And then whenever she came into my room to check on me, I was already on the floor by my bed. And I guess I'd thrown up and I didn't even know I did it.
Right.
It was just like on the floor next to me. And I remember her saying, like, why are you on the floor? And in my head, I had no idea I was on the floor. I thought I was on my bed still.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And I remember her asking if I could get up or not. And she said, if you can't get up, I'll call the ambulance. Mm-hmm. And so when I couldn't get up, I remember her calling the ambulance. And I remember her calling them, but it's weird because I don't remember them showing up. I don't remember them coming into my room, putting me in the ambulance, getting to the hospital. So it's all really like kind of wild to me that I just go blank from there, kind of. So I was filled in on a lot of kind of what happened.
Same. It's bizarre because I've been told over and over and over again the things that have happened. Mm-hmm. And in my head, I'm like, okay, am I remembering this? Or is it just that I've been told this so many times that it's just in my head? It's like, oh yeah, that's what happened. Mm-hmm. What's the gap? Like, where do you start remembering things steadily again? Mm-hmm. Was it a few days? Was it a few hours? A few weeks?
A little over a week. Because I told my mom the first thing I clearly remember was because I had a craniectomy 3 days after the stroke. Because after the stroke, the stroke was in the right side of my brain.
Right.
And so my brain had started swelling up from the stroke. And they were afraid, or they kind of started to see like the beginning of a midline shift. I don't know if you've heard of that.
I don't believe
with the swelling on the right side of my brain, it was kind of part of the swelling up was almost crossing over like the midline of the brain. And they didn't want it to put so much pressure on the good side that wasn't harmed that it would start causing damage to the good side of the brain.
Wow.
So they were saying, well, if we do this craniectomy where they remove that skull piece on the right side, then it would give the brain more room for the swelling and it wouldn't have as much pressure on the brain.
Wow. And they did that. I'm sure you don't remember much about that.
No. So I had that 3 days after, and I mean, the surgeons or someone cut off like a little part of my hair for the surgery, just enough to get done what they needed to do. But I was told they left me with a really wonky, not great haircut. And so one of the workers at the hospital asked if we wanted her to buzz off the rest of my hair. Mm-hmm. And at first I was like, heck no. But then I thought, well, at least they'll grow in evenly, hopefully, when it comes back. So you know what? Screw it. Just do it.
Hey, I saw some of the pictures. It didn't look bad. You look good.
Thanks. So I told my mom the first thing I clearly remember was the worker buzzing it off.
Oh, wow.
And she goes, that was after your coma. And I was like, sorry, come again. Because I had the craniectomy, but then I was in a roughly like a week long medically induced coma.
Okay. Yeah. While you healed, right?
Yeah. Because they said that, because at the time I was still processing things pretty slow, mm-hmm. which is probably a good thing. But I mean, at the time. But they said if she starts kind of realizing everything that happened and the what it caused, then we don't want her to start stressing out a lot because the stress could keep the brain swelling from going down at a quicker pace.
Wow.
So they said if we do the craniectomy and put her in the medically induced coma, she'll probably be calm enough that the swelling will go down faster mm-hmm. and be more safe for the brain.
Right. And that seemed to work out.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's bizarre that you just wake up. Oh, yeah. Coma. Wait, what? That's really bizarre. It's bizarre because I know what it's like to be in the hospital and have like a bunch of weird stuff happening. And then people tell you things. You're like, wait, what? What?
It's really, I
wasn't in a coma. I can only imagine how like wild that must have been to you. Mm-hmm. But after you came to, you know, mm-hmm. what were the deficits that ended up happening after your stroke?
Oh, sorry. One more thing. So kind of like what you were saying with being told things that happened and you didn't really remember it. And you're like, oh, that's kind of wild. So with the coma, I had a ventilator during that time too. So, I mean, I was told it was doing most of like the breathing work for me initially. And then they kind of like weaned me off of it.
Right.
And then they slowly had me weaned off the like medication they gave me to induce me into the coma. Mm-hmm. And so when I came out of it, I was still kind of very out of it, so to speak. And so I remember my family talking about me coming off the vent. And in my head, I was like, what the heck is this vent they're talking about? I didn't even ask what it was at the time, but I remember them saying that and thinking, what the heck is this vent? I have no idea what they're talking about.
Did somebody explain it to you eventually?
I forget if it was at the hospital, but just later on at some point, they told me I was on the ventilator and I was like, oh, ventilator vent. Got it.
Right. I get it. So you weren't capable of breathing for yourself at the time?
I guess at some point there it was doing most of it for me, because I asked my mom if it was doing just part of like the breathing for me or all of it. And she said she thinks it was doing the most or the majority of it at one point, and they kind of like weaned me off of it. So it wasn't just to like cut off cold turkey for my lungs, I guess. It kind of eased back into it.
Wow. That's really frightening. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just really intense. And that's one hell of a thing to wake up to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. By the way, I wasn't able to breathe by myself. Machine did it for me. Yeah. Let me just move on with my day. That's strange.
And I asked my mom, like, when the paramedics came, did they deem it pretty quickly that they thought I had the stroke? And she goes, actually, no. She said that they thought I had fallen out of bed and hit my head on like my nightstand.
Oh, okay.
And she's like, she's 23. She didn't roll out of bed. And so I'm wondering, because I don't exactly know if what I'm almost thinking might have happened is I probably got up to go to the bath, or I probably woke up and realized I had to go to the bathroom. And then tried to get out of bed to go to the bathroom. And then when I put my feet on the ground, that's when like the hemiplegia kicked in and I just kind of dropped to the ground. And that's where she found me on the ground.
Right.
So that's my best guess, but obviously I don't know for sure. That's kind of the play by play.
Thank you to our amazing community on Patreon for supporting this podcast.
You can support us too and get different perks and gifts depending on which Neuro Jedi tier you sign up for. For example, if you're on our Neuro Padawan $5 tier, then you're probably listening to this episode a day early before its public release.
Your support helps us grow and continue to create this podcast. Plus, a portion of the proceeds go to a different cause or individual in the brain injury survivor community each month. Sign up at patreon.com/theneuronerds.
A lot. Does it bug you that you don't know 100%? Like, does it kind of mess with your head a little bit?
A little bit at times it has, but at the same time I'm thinking, well, maybe there's a reason why I wasn't supposed to remember what happened. Maybe it would have been more traumatizing.
Right. No, I agree with that. You know, I think there are certain things that we need to make peace with. I'm still working on it because there's like a huge chunk of my recovery that I have zero memory of, like none. Mm-hmm. I'll look at pictures and I'm like, I don't remember any of these people. I actually went back to the hospital that the emergency room that I went to, mm-hmm. and the nurses knew me. They're like, oh my God, like you're walking. This is amazing. And I'm like,
that's so cool.
I was like, I don't know who you are. Like it really, it was shocking to me because they clearly knew who I was and I had not even a little bit in the back of my mind. Yeah. I had nothing. It was 100% nothing, which makes me feel immediately like I'm insane, right? Mm-hmm. Like when you don't remember something and everybody else does, it's like, okay, well, what's wrong with me? Well, what's wrong with me is I have a brain injury. So that's what it is. But it was just really, really bizarre to not remember somebody who clearly not just recognizes me, knows me, and who has spent a good amount of time with me. And what's even weirder is looking at pictures where this nurse is helping me walk, which is like, I'm like, oh man, will you do? Can I tell you why it gets really weird for me as a grown-ass man, dude? I'm like, I think she might've had to help me get into the shower, which is very strange for me, or help me in the restroom. It's very uncomfortable for me. So this is when
I become at peace with those thoughts or those the memory not being there. Well, you know, I mean, it's okay. I don't need to, this stuff. I don't need to remember. I don't need to remember this tiny little Filipino nurse helping me into the shower. Not something I think I want to remember.
Yeah, when my mom said that, she told them that I was likely didn't roll out of bed. She's like, does no one think that she's having a stroke except me?
Wow.
And wow. So I'm guessing that they probably just thought I was too young for that to be what was going on.
Sadly, that happens a lot. You know, the fact that you're young. Okay, so younger brain injury survivor, stroke survivor specifically. The first thing that they'll ask normally is, what kind of drugs are you on?
Yeah.
And it's with me, they kept asking, you know, is he on cocaine? What drugs is he doing? And, you know, mostly because I'm an idiot and I was joking about drugs. Apparently, I don't remember this.
Oh, I thought you were just telling that you were just high.
No, I was joking about drugs because right before I had my stroke, I remember seeing a viral video of this one dude. It was like a reporter and she was asking people about the Powerball. And she went to like this really shady guy at a liquor store. She's like, sir, if you won the Powerball, what would you do with the money? And like, he just turns around. He looks on live TV and he's like, get a bunch of cocaine and hookers. So I thought it was the funniest thing in the world. And apparently in the hospital, I kept on joking about cocaine and hookers. So everybody in the hospital thought that I was on cocaine. So they kept on asking my girlfriend. They're like, hey, is he on drugs? Does he do cocaine? Because we need to know. Because apparently the drug that they give you to help you, if it interacts with cocaine, you'll die. So they're like, we need to know if he's on cocaine. She's like, he's not. But he keeps on talking about cocaine. She's like, he's not. He doesn't do drugs. He's just an idiot. She had to explain that to the doctors. So I'm really surprised because it happens. Look, younger stroke survivors, it's not so uncommon. But a lot of times in emergency rooms, doctors and nurses are just like, well, clearly this person can't be having a stroke because they're young. It's ridiculous at this point. You know what I mean? Like we have, sadly, children that have strokes. It's not that far out of the possibility of it happening. So it just always bums me out that it's like, well, I know all of the signs say stroke, but you're young. So clearly that can't be it. It's really frustrating. It's amazing that your mom was like, this seems like a stroke. Did she talk to the doctors about that?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
At what point were they like, she had a stroke?
I don't know if it was before they did the CTs or after. But it's weird, too, because I have a very, very vague memory of some of the workers asking the kind of basic, like, do you know where you are? What is today's date? Or where are you? What happened? Kind of stuff. Right. Just kind of seeing like where I was cognitively. I don't remember answering, but I asked my mom, I said, did I answer them? She goes, yeah, you answered. And I kind of want to be like, were they the correct answers?
Right. Right. You know, it's weird sometimes because when I had my stroke, apparently I was pretty cool for like a long time, for almost like a full day after my right basal ganglia ruptured. Apparently I was just like really cool. It is like, I went to a bar. I watched my girlfriend perform. I had a beer. All these dumb things that you shouldn't do that I did. And I was like as coherent as I could be. I don't remember any of it. I have like zero memory, but I was coherence. And then I don't remember anything for about 2 months. Like, it's wild. Like you said, like little flashes, little bits that I'll remember. Like, oh, somebody helped me in the shower. That was weird. Or hey, is that somebody yelling down the hall? That's strange. Like all of these weird things. When were you coherent after your brain surgery? Like when were you like, holy shit, I had brain surgery?
I don't know time-wise exactly. Like I know I was there 17 days overall and the craniectomy was 3 days after. The coma was about a week. So it gives a little bit of a time frame, but I don't know exactly after coming out of the coma, like how many days after I was kind of more coherent, I guess. But one of the like kind of funny things is I remember was my neurosurgeon came to talk to me after. And I was like, my jaw hurts. Is that normal? And he goes, well, when I did your surgery, I had to make a little cut in one of the facial muscles. So it's not surprising, but it'll go away pretty quick. And I was like, okay, cool. I was like, was it this muscle? And I just named off some random muscle on the face that I remembered. And I think my dad said that he told him I was right, but he had to pull out his phone and like check.
That's amazing.
Verify. And my dad sits there shaking his head. And he's like, you don't remember what you had for breakfast 2 hours ago, but you're challenging your neurosurgeon on a muscle in your face.
That is pretty amazing. The fact that he had to cut your face muscle, though, that's insane. That's wild.
I know. But yeah, you were asking, I just remembered a couple of minutes ago, you were asking kind of what the deficits were from it, I think. So since it was on the right side of the brain, I had the left-sided hemiplegia, so the left-sided paralysis for the arm and leg. Mm-hmm. And then I have it's called hemianopsia. So I lost a good amount of peripheral vision to my left side in both eyes.
Oh, okay.
And I have left neglect, which you probably read about it in Maddie's book, because I know you read Maddie's book, I think.
Right. I'm in Maddie's book. Of course I read it.
So the left neglect was a very interesting thing to kind of get used to, because I had a very similar experience to Maddie in the hospital in terms of how we kind of figured out that I had it. Because mm-hmm. I would eat the food on the left side or the right side of my plate and not the left side of the plate.
Thank goodness. I've been called, I say this a lot, and you know, I just want to always like kind of hammer it in. I've been called a walking, talking miracle, because there's no reason why I should be as functional as I am with the type of stroke that I had. So Maddie and I had the same stroke. We had the same type of stroke.
But yours wasn't an AVM, right? It was like a blood pressure thing.
Yeah. Mine was a basal ganglia rupture. It was the blood pressure made my brain explode, because I'm a recovering Catholic, never processed anything. Blood pressure was through the roof. Blah, 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 blah. So I had, for a small amount of time, I had left side neglect when I was in the hospital.
Mm-hmm. But you don't remember?
I don't remember much. I do remember drawing. So they would ask me questions and they would say, hey, draw a clock.
Yeah,
I would draw a clock. Mm-hmm. I would draw one half of a clock. Mm-hmm. They would say, draw a person. And I would literally draw a half of a person.
And they would ask. The weirdest, one arm, one leg.
Literally just a literal half of a human, well, sick person. I don't know how to draw. And a clock. I would literally draw the left side or the right side of the clock. Uh-huh. That's all I would do. So then they would ask me, what about the other side? And I distinctly remember just being so confused.
You're like, what other side?
Because I'm looking at it. I'm looking at what I just drew, which is not Picasso. It's messy, yes. But I'm clearly seeing a clock, and I'm clearly seeing a person that I drew, and I didn't understand, and it didn't connect and didn't process that there was a piece that was missing. But turns out I was literally just drawing half of things. That the mind is insane. It's wild how the mind just didn't acknowledge that one side of my body was there. So the one side of my body came back thanks to a buddy of mine. I know it sounds weird. I had the hospital I was at was kind of lax at night. So I had like visitors at like 2 o'clock in the morning. All of my friends were in music industry, and my buddy had just come to visit me from the studio, and he might've been a little high. He might've, you know, just saying. So he came in just to visit to say, hey, and I was there with my girlfriend, and we're just like having a conversation back and forth. Apparently, I don't remember, but we were just very chill. It was just a normal, just two idiots having a conversation. And he said something. He was making fun of, like, you know, the barrier over the sheet that comes down over the bed to kind of like it. He looked up and he was like, yeah, it's kind of like a choo-choo train. And I looked up and I was like, oh yeah. And I lifted my left leg got real comfortable. And apparently like Felice was just like, oh my God, like freaking out, like keep on talking. And I got so relaxed and so comfortable that I acknowledged for the first time in however long that I had a left side. So
yeah,
I'm thankful that it didn't continue past the few days or whatever it was, the week or so that I was in the hospital. But it's wild how that happens. And I'm very thankful that I'm here and as functional, you know. You were physically, you were affected very badly. From there until now, how would you say you've recovered?
I mean, the arm and hand are definitely a slower process than the leg. But I mean, I was told the leg would probably come back much quicker just because you do so much on your feet. And like every time you go get anything, you're on your legs or you're standing up and putting weight onto your leg. So your brain's kind of getting signals that you want to use the leg because you're always getting up on it, kind of thing.
Right.
So, and I was told that I or that lots of people typically get movement back from the joints closest to the trunk first. So either like the hip when it comes to the leg, or the shoulder when it comes to the arm. And then it would kind of work its way down the arm toward like the elbow to the knee, down to the ankle, wrist, and then the fingers would come in later.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And so I was like, oh, well, that's kind of good to know. So I shouldn't be too surprised that the fingers aren't going to come back in two days kind of thing.
Right.
I mean, kind of nice, but kind of frustrating at the same time.
Yeah. Look, knowing something and actually living through it, two completely different things, you know, like knowing this is what it might be. And also, okay, I can accept that. But then it actually happening, it's like, I don't want to accept this. So I'm assuming you've learned more patience than you've ever had in your life.
Oh, yes, definitely. I still need to work on it, but it's definitely much better than it was last February when everything began, for sure.
Right. My first physical therapist, he saved my recovery because I was very impatient. I had no patience, none. I remember
you talking about this the first time I video chatted with you.
Oh, awesome. That's it. Hey, if nothing, I'm consistent. I could barely stand. Like if I was just standing still, I was swaying. And if I closed my eyes, I would fall down. Like I couldn't even function. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to do more, always wanted to do more. And he gave me the wisest words ever. And every, you know, survivor out there should really hold on to this phrase. You have to be patient or you will forever be a patient. I was like, oh, shit, I don't want to be a patient. I don't want to go to the doctor. I hate the hospital. So it was from that moment on that I actually like listened to my physical therapist. I listened to my occupational therapist and I slowed down. I was like, hey, I want to run, but I'm good right now just learning how to stand still without swaying. So that helped me a lot. You know,
you said you didn't have a lot of like physical deficits, right? So how was like your leg? Cause did you have, what was like trying to walk like at first for you?
It was okay. It was like a baby deer. Like I really, my legs were like jelly. It was weird because it was almost the same feeling I had when I had my stroke. The second I had my stroke, I knew when it happened. And it was like maybe within a minute or so afterwards where every muscle fiber in my body turned to jelly. And I said out loud, I was like, wow, I feel like I'm learning how to walk again. Cause that's what it felt like. I felt like baby deer legs.
A real boy.
When I was recovering, it felt the same. I didn't feel the same. I was in a new body. I was in a new brain.
Yeah.
But I really didn't understand. Like it's the strangest thing to try to explain to someone. It was my body, but it didn't feel anything like my body.
Mm-hmm.
Every step I took, it wasn't like, okay, well, you lift your right leg and you lift your left leg. It didn't work that way. It was really a process to move. You're literally learning how to walk and function again. But with me, it came back a lot quicker. It was a lot of weakness mostly. Mm-hmm. And it came back within a few weeks. I was walking fine. And then,
wild.
It seriously is. When I say I'm walking, talking miracle, man, like I mean it. Several people in the neuro field, when they know the type of stroke that I had, when like I meet them, they look at me like I'm an alien. Cause they're like, yeah, no, this isn't supposed to be like, it's amazing. So most of my deficits are cognitive. It's short-term memory is like the worst.
Me too.
I'm like Dory, it's the worst, but it's getting better. You know, my occupational therapist was amazing and I wouldn't be as functional as I am today without her. And physically, I gotta tell you, I feel like I'm killing it. I do have issues with my right hand. When I exhaust the hand,
tremor.
It's awful. Like it's, and then I get really clumsy and like I can't grip things and they fall. And that's when, you know, I say, oh yeah, patience. I don't have any patience for that. Like I am the meanest person to myself. Do you have negative self-talk when, you know, things aren't going the way that you want them to?
I definitely have at times, but at times, if I'm more like conscious of it, I'll try to get out of that pretty quick, but it's definitely still happens at times.
Oh, okay. Don't do that. This is me yelling at you. You know, we have to be kind to ourselves. Like we do. Do you want to know why? We survived a brain injury.
Exactly.
That's a lot. How's your support system?
Good. One of the good things my family and I were saying was when the stroke happened, like I was supposed to be going to school that day. So if it had happened, just because we don't really know what time in the morning it began. So I don't know what the window was like between when it started and what time I got to the hospital, which is kind of a frightening factor of it. But at least I hadn't tried to get out of the house and get in the car to leave for school when it happened.
That would have been a bad idea.
Yeah.
You know, look, as bad as things are, you could think they could have been so much worse. Mm-hmm. You know, you could have been on your way to school. You could have been behind the wheel. That would have been horrible. Not even just for you. Imagine
for someone else just driving it by. Yeah.
It would have been horrible. You know, I think I suffered from migraines forever, and I've missed so many things due to my migraines because they popped up. Turns out it was unchecked high blood pressure. Anyway, that night, if I didn't go see my girlfriend perform, I would have been at home and had my stroke. Mm-hmm. I might not have made it, you know, because I would have just been there by myself. And who knows what would have happened if I didn't have somebody to like force me to go to the hospital. It's wild. Things kind of like, you know, we're blessed. And I know sometimes it doesn't seem that way because having a brain injury sucks.
Definitely.
One star would not recommend. This is not the thing. But, you know, like I always come back to, as crazy as things are, we're here to experience how crazy these things can be. And that's a beautiful thing. It's having a brain injury is very difficult, right? Mm-hmm. At what point were you like, this really does suck, but I'm going to be able to get past this? Or were you always super like, you know what? This is just a little hurdle that I'm going to bust through and I'm going to win.
I wouldn't say that. The first thing that I feel like started processing more, once I started kind of processing things at a more normal pace, the first thing that kind of hit me was that I wouldn't be going back to school right away.
Right.
Because I was in my first year of my doctorate program to be a PT.
Amazing.
Which is kind of ironic a little bit. So I was about 8 months into my first of 3 years in the physical therapy program. Mm-hmm. And I was like, crap, I'm not going back to school right away. Because I was like, I still have 2 more years. Like, I have to get back to the program.
Right.
And right. I had an interest in doing neuro PT, also kind of ironic.
That's wow.
My mom was using, or she has a lot, or I gave her a lot of contacts to certain people, and she contacted the school on, I think, her phone to kind of tell the school what happened and that I wouldn't be coming back to the program.
Right.
At least anytime soon. And the head of the physical therapy department kind of reached out to some of the other staff in the physical therapy program at the school to explain what happened. And my mom gets a message back from one of the women who teach at the school saying, if you can get Amanda into the inpatient acute rehab center here that's associated with the grad school, she said, my husband, Dan, is the head neuro PT at the inpatient center, and he'd be able to work with Amanda for rehab.
How amazing is that? Is that what happened?
Yeah. So we were able to get me into the grad school that was associated, or the rehab center that was associated with my grad school that I was going to for PT school. And I ended up working with this teacher's husband, Dan, as my neuro PT and inpatient.
Wow. What a small world, actually.
I know. It gets smaller, too, because I got my OT and my speech therapist assigned to me. The speech therapist that I had named Jody, I asked them if I could say their names on the podcast, and they were like, sure, go ahead. But Jody was like, because she saw that I was a student in the school there.
Right.
And she asked if I knew this person named Todd. And I was like, he interviewed me for the PT program in 2018. And she goes, that's my son-in-law. And I was like, are you kidding me?
That's wild. Who knew that this world was so small?
I know.
You know, it's like the Marvel Cinematic Universe when it comes to you and all that stuff. It's all connected.
Yeah.
You know, you weren't able to you know, finish, you weren't able to finish your program, right?
The head of the PT department kind of told my mom, like, if, like, by some miracle, I was able to get, like, prepared enough to go back to the PT program within a year, then they would have let me kind of pick up almost kind of like where I left off kind of thing.
Right.
But otherwise, I'm guessing if I were to go back now, I would have to kind of start the process over, which is a lot. But I was like, I feel like the first assumption would have been that it wouldn't have been less than, or just a year to kind of get back to where I would need to be for the program.
Right. Right. You know, hey, anything is possible. Anything, you know? And after your brain injury, after coming this close to not being here, you literally do whatever you want to do. Whatever's going to make you happy, you're here. You made it. Do that. And I don't think there's anything out of the realm of possibilities. You know, you want to fly? Let's fly. You want to jump out of an airplane? Let's jump out of an airplane, Amanda.
I have done that.
Same. I love it. Wait, do you have plans on doing it again?
I don't know, but if I hadn't had the stroke, maybe, but having had the stroke, I'm more hesitant about it.
Oh my God. Having had a stroke, I'm more gung-ho about it. More. Like, yeah, let's do it. You know, look, my brain tried to kill me. Jumping out of an airplane, that's old hat. That's not going to be, that's just a day.
So I don't know. Do you know if there's any like you can't do it because you had the stroke kind of thing? Like
there is mostly like within the first, what was it? The first year or so. That's what my doctor told me. I was like, hey, can I do this? Can I do that? And he's like, yeah, but like later you gotta make sure like that all this is healed and good. I don't think there's any issues. I would consult with your doctor first. Mm-hmm. And if your doctor looks at you like this, don't do it.
Because I think I had read on, I forget whose Instagram account, it might have been Priya's, mm-hmm. out in Australia, saying that she wanted to skydive, but because of the stroke, like she's not able to or something. I don't know.
Oh, that's a bummer.
I don't know if that's true or not, but I haven't asked since. So
hey, if you're not able to, I will skydive twice. Once for me, once for you. It's going to be amazing. I'm excited. I love that kind of stuff. Just keep me out of the ocean. I'm not a fan of the ocean.
That's how I am. I was less afraid to skydive when I went than I was to do like a scuba dive.
Yes. Look, I don't know what's at the bottom of the ocean. I don't.
The ocean's fascinating. It's cool, but it's terrifying at the same time.
Yeah. Have you ever seen The Abyss? Nah, man. All right. It's just scary. I don't want to do that. So you've been rehabbing basically since you got home, right?
Pretty much. Yeah. I was in the hospital for 17 days overall. And then I went to the inpatient acute center by my grad school. And I was there for exactly 7 weeks. And I don't know if you had this trouble, but whenever you first started doing things again after the stroke, could you stay upright when you were seated or would you tip over?
I would tip over, especially if I blinked long. My balance was so bad that I would literally almost fall out of my chair. I almost had to hold on.
Yeah, I had the lack of sitting balance too. And that's such a weird concept to me because I've heard my teachers talk about having sitting balance trouble in patients. And I was like, what does that feel like? Like, that's so strange. And then after the stroke, every time I would try to sit up, I was like, I feel like I'm falling. I feel like I'm falling. And I was immediately start tipping over.
It went from what did that feel like to, oh, that's how it feels.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what it feels like. It does not feel good. That's what it feels like. It feels very uncomfortable. It feels literally like you're an adult who can't sit down. Like, I know that sounds ridiculous, but that's exactly what it is. You know, I had a point in recovery, like physically, where I was like, I am back. I'm 100%. This is amazing. I was on the Bunzu ball. I was standing on one leg and I was like, man, I'm killing it. And then my PT was like, wow, you're really doing well. Do me a favor. I was standing there. He's like, all right, close your eyes. I closed my eyes and I fell down.
Oh, geez.
It was weird because eyes open, I was fine. As soon as I closed my eyes, my equilibrium was completely off. Mm-hmm. It was like a weird brain thing. That took me a few weeks to kind of get back because I was like, I don't want to yawn and then fall. You know what I mean? Like, I was just really nervous. And also, I don't want to mob around with a helmet because it'll probably need a helmet to protect my brain.
Are you finding it hard to recover at home after stroke? Find out if Modus Nova can help you by taking their free online assessment at modusnova.com/theneuronerds. If you haven't heard of Modus Nova, they make devices to help folks with a brain injury like stroke regain the use of their affected limbs. For example, the Modus Hand is an AI-powered robotic exoskeleton that helps users do exercises and play games, similar to the way an occupational or a physical therapist might manipulate the limb. It helps survivors get in the thousands of repetitions they need to form new neural pathways. It can assist with hand movements or resist them to provide a personalized exercise experience. If this sounds like something you want to try, visit modusnova.com/theneuronerds to learn more. Use special code TheNeuroNerds when you sign up and get a month free with the 30-day challenge. Just visit modusnova.com/theneuronerds to get started.
You know? Yeah. I had the helmet for 4 months because of the craniectomy.
Oh.
So they wouldn't let me leave the inpatient center, or sorry, the hospital to the inpatient acute center until I had the helmet.
Did you put stickers on it?
I did not. My friends bought me some toward the end of the time that I was done needing it. So I had them, but I never got around to actually putting like a few of them on.
You could have put like fire on the side, like a skull and crossbones, you know, make it yours. If you're going to wear a helmet, make it badass. Maybe like a spike on the top of it, like a biker. I think it'd be really good. It'd be amazing. So in rehab, you were, you've been using the Modus hand that just belongs. So happens to be long. So Modus Nova, one of the sponsors of my podcast. So how has the Modus hand worked out for you?
Good. I didn't get it until about 3 to 4 months ago. So I have it currently. I have the Hand Mentor, which is the device from the company that works on the wrist motions, like the wrist flexion and extension primarily. So I have that one. I was trying to decide initially if I wanted to get the one for the ankle or the wrist first. Mm-hmm. And I kind of debated it for a while because I really, really wanted to get my hand going because my leg was progressing much quicker by the time I left from the inpatient acute rehab center. Because I told you I got there initially when I couldn't like sit up straight, but I left 7 weeks exactly later and I was walking with my cane when I left.
Right.
So my leg was progressing much faster, but the arm was just not kicking in for quite a long time. And so I was like, I really want to get the wrist one to get my wrist started because I heard that I would probably get movement in the wrist before the fingers would kind of start kicking in.
Right.
And so I was like, I need to get the wrist. But then I was like, well, if I get the foot mentor or the one that helps with the ankle, then it'd be something that helps with functional purposes, but it'd also be something that helps with kind of like a safety matter too, because then I won't roll an ankle.
Oh, right.
Potentially. So I was like, maybe I should get the ankle one. But what helped me decide was at the outpatient center I started going to in, I think, early June, maybe, last year, I was asked if I wanted to be in a research study that used an exoskeleton.
Right.
And so they were trying to help show that doing robotic therapy in combination with traditional physical therapy would give better results for neurological patients who are learning to walk again. Mm-hmm. And so they would have one group that was solely doing for 6 weeks sessions with the exoskeleton. One group was doing sessions that were just traditional PT sessions, and one was a combination of the two.
Right.
And so I ended up getting put into the one that was traditional PT for 6 weeks. And then at the end of this session, like the first 6 weeks, everyone got to do at least 9 sessions with the robot. Mm-hmm. So I still got to try it, but my main 6 week block was with traditional PT. And I was like, well, the Modus Nova is kind of almost like a robotic device. So I feel like I shouldn't be using the foot device from Modus during the time of the research study. Because my cousin who got a PT degree a few years back, she said, you probably want to just stick to the exercises that they're giving you at the traditional PT session so that your outside therapy doesn't skew the results of the research study.
Right. That makes sense.
And so I was like, well, I'm not in the robotic group for the study, so maybe I shouldn't be getting the somewhat robotic device to help my ankle and my walking during the research study.
So that's why you went with the Modus hand.
The hand one, yeah.
Right. And how would you say the Modus hand has worked for you?
I think it has definitely helped, but I think it's kind of, for me, in my view, it's kind of a combination of the Modus hand and the Botox injections that I get. Mm-hmm. So I know some people who have paired doing the Modus hand and then immediately after doing mirror therapy, if you've heard of that.
Right.
So, and some people said that's really helped them. And I have like a mirror box that I could do mirror therapy with, but I haven't been pulling it out while I've been using the Modus hand. So I just try to work on the Modus hand for probably 1 to 2 hours a day. I started with an hour a day. Mm-hmm. And then I've kind of more recently, I'm trying to do more like 2 a day if I can, because I'm trying to shoot for the 150 hour mark right now.
Right.
I got my or one of my doses of Botox right around the time that I had ordered the Modus hand to come be sent to me. Mm-hmm. And so by the time I got the hand mentor in my house, the Botox I had gotten had kicked in, luckily.
Right.
And I had put some of the Botox in the muscles of my wrist that flex the wrist down, which is part of what my tone wants to do, is right. cause wrist flexion. So within a couple of weeks of using the hand mentor, I want to say it was about the 2 week mark, I was able to start seeing a bit of wrist extension outside of the device. But I also knew that I had the Botox kind of temporarily paralyzing the muscles that were overactive that would cause my wrist to normally flex down from right. the tone.
Right.
So then whenever the Botox was wearing off and the Botox and the wrist flexors was wearing off, then I started seeing the wrist flexion kind of start kicking in with using the device. So I can see like the timing of the results I'm seeing with when the Botox is either kicked in or when it's wearing off and what muscles they have it injected in or not injected into. And to try to put it somewhat shortish.
When it comes to the time being put in it, I think the goal is like the Michael Jordan of Modus Nova would be Maddie.
Like, oh yeah.
She is, what's the politest way to put this? She's a lunatic. But it's amazing with what she's done, where she was and where she is now. You mm-hmm. know, it's inspiring, you know. I just think it's great. Also, if I see your scores up there, I'm going to try to beat it. I'm just saying that. I think it's cool that you actually get to see other people's scores, because it's like, oh yeah, I want to beat Amanda. I want to beat Maddie. I haven't beat Maddie yet. And it's really, honestly, it's pissing me off. I'm not even gonna lie. Like I'm a competitive person, and I'm like, I'm gonna do, and I haven't beat her, and it's really frustrating. So when you're doing that, if you beat Maddie, please take a picture of it and send it to me so I can gloat. Okay. Like, really, it would make me feel really good that I'd be like, yeah, take that, Maddie. I'm excited. When you try the Modus foot, you know, please keep us in the loop mm-hmm. and let us know how that works for you, because I'm fascinated with these machines, you know, mm-hmm. it's incredible. And also you're kind of like, you're going to be like Iron Man, you know, like your little Iron Man suit, or you're going to be like, I mentioned it to the CEO of Modus Nova. I was like, it's kind of like, it reminds me of Aliens when Sigourney Weaver was in the big mech suit and she fought the alien. So, mm-hmm. you know, if we ever have like an alien invasion, you're ready to rock and roll, you know, Modus Nova is going to save the world. one day. What's do you have goals for like the rest of the year? Do you have like, hey, at this point I want to do this?
Well, I'm definitely trying to work on getting, because you don't have problems with tone, do you? Like the hyper level of tone?
No, I function at an executive level.
Dang, that's quite nice. It's a pain in the butt.
yeah. Like I'm telling you. Walking, talking miracle.
Because with a lot of my wrist movement right now, like I have just a little bit of like the wrist extension and flexion mm-hmm. whenever I'm outside of the device, but my fingers want to curl up whenever I start the motion for both. So I'm trying to, like, one of that teacher from my grad school, Todd, who was one who interviewed me for the mm-hmm. PT program.
Oh, yeah.
The one who was the like son-in-law of my speech therapist.
Small world.
He was saying, whenever you work on the wrist extension, only extend it just enough to where your fingers really start pulling in mm-hmm. and curling, and then let it relax. Because you don't want to teach your brain that every time your wrist lifts up, you want your fingers to stay curled up.
Right. You want to, yeah.
Because he was saying, if you want to be able to like pick something up, like say off of a table or on your lap or whatever, and then you want to drop it, mm-hmm. you would need that wrist extension, but you would need the fingers to open up. And if they're constantly wanting to stay curled up, whenever you move your wrist up, it's not going to let you drop whatever's in your hand.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Right. That's, I'll say this though. I know whatever goal you set, you're going to hit. Like, I know that, you know, because you're a rock star, and everything I've seen from you, like I know these are all things that are going to happen, because from the, like when I met you, from where you were to where you are, it's incredible. Like, it really is. Everything from even having a conversation with you and talking to you, like, it's like, oh wow. Like, you are a brand new person. the way that you're walking, the way that you're moving your arm, all of those things are brand new. The long hair that you have now. Because when I first met you, you were like me, you have very short hair. And by short hair, I'm bald. You had shorter hair. mine isn't coming back. I'm living vicariously through yours. So I think that's amazing. I hope that you continue that fight and just keep on sharing your victories, because they're important. It's important for you to celebrate. It's also important for other people in our community to see that it can be done.
Are you a stroke or brain injury survivor looking for a community and support? Well, the NeuroNerds are here to help. Join our hashtag USORock Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/USORock to connect with other survivors like you.
Plus, read other inspirational brain injury survivor stories on Joe's blog at josorock.com/USORock and submit your stories there as well. We want to hear them.
And remember,
you so rock.
Stop laughing at us. I think it's amazing. And at this point in the show, Amanda, I will say this. We are the neuro nerds over here. So I have to ask you, what's your nerdom?
I'm not sure how to exactly word it, but I would say definitely it's something PT related, because I'll explain. A lot of times I'll just go straight into talking in PT terms whenever I'm trying to explain stuff about recovery. And some of the people I talk to on like support pages on social media are like, what the heck are you saying? And I'm like, sorry, give me a minute. Right. And I was like, I'll explain it to you, but just give me a little bit of time to type it out or do a voice message, or I'll video call you or something to kind of explain better.
So I'll say you love PT, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. You're PT nerd.
I went to an LA Fitness this morning because one of my goals is to try to get back to doing a full gym workout in a regular gym again.
Right.
And so I was thinking, well, kind of a good first step is I'm trying to get a session set up with one of the trainers there. Mm-hmm. And the trainer said he's done a little bit with someone who had a stroke before. So I figure that's a bit better of a person to kind of tag along with. But I'm going to try to start going on Saturday mornings for 30-minute sessions. The first one's an hour, but I figure, well, it's a step in the right direction of the goal of trying to get to a full gym workout again on my own.
Right. Hey, it's steps. Recovery is all steps.
I started kind of saying what I wanted to work on and kind of improve. And I immediately started talking in PT terms. And my mom was like, sorry, she does that a lot.
She's like, English, Amanda. English. Hey, you know what? It's one of your passions. You enjoy it. I appreciate that. Hey, and when it comes to recovery is ongoing as a process. You know, it's steps. Take one step at a time. You're never going to be overwhelmed. You know, Amanda, I think you're a rock star. Like I'm always impressed by you. I'm inspired by your fight. Like I really appreciate you coming on the podcast and sharing your story.
Thank you.
Now, would you like people to reach out to you on the socials?
If they want to, they can. Sure.
All right, cool. So this is a part of the show where I give out our socials. So if you want to reach out to Amanda, you can reach out to Amanda at Amanda_Nicole236 on Instagram. Did I get that right?
Mm-hmm.
I hope so, because I was reading it. And if I can't read that, it's a problem.
That reminds me of something.
What's that?
So with the like peripheral vision loss that I have, because I have the left neglect, which isn't true vision loss. It's just the lack of awareness of the left side. But then the hemianopsia is the actual like field cut or vision loss that I have to the left side.
Right.
So my speech therapist gave me just some, it was kind of like almost balancing a checkbook, but on like a homework sheet.
Right.
And she's like, here you go, work on this and bring it back whenever you come back. So I go to work on it and I kept getting all the math problems wrong. And I was like, there's no way I forgot basic math. Like, what the heck? I kept getting all frustrated because I felt really stupid, but I was like, and I'm not a stupid person, at least pretty decent at math growing up and stuff. Right. Wasn't my favorite subject once I got to calculus, but I mean, up until then, I didn't mind it too much. And then I started realizing that it wasn't trouble with the math itself. It was that I had trouble lining up the numbers that I needed to add or subtract.
Oh, right. So I would
start adding or subtracting the wrong numbers, and then I would get the answer wrong and then be like, what the heck is going on? And so I was told to start using graph paper anytime I did my math, because it had the little boxes to help line up the numbers, and it helps some, but I'm still kind of getting used to making sure that I'm properly lining up numbers.
Hey, it's even that is a process, you know, it's a mental process. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get it. Do you want to know why, Amanda? because you can do anything. I truly believe that.
So with the goals that I'm trying to work on throughout the rest of the year, I'm trying to kind of get my hip and knee to get flexion at the same time, which is definitely a challenging task for me to kind of break through. And it's definitely a lot better, but
right.
It still has a ways to go. It's kind of like the muscle coordination to do it is tough. Mm-hmm. But I figure, well, it's helpful for stairs, for curbs, just getting into a car. It's helpful in walking. It's helpful in so many different things. So having that be a stronger or like just something more easy to do, then that'd be good. So I'm kind of working on that. And then I talked to Modus recently, or I left them voicemails, and they actually called me earlier before this podcast. So awesome. You're going to schedule to talk on Monday, because I wanted to try to return my Modus hand and get the foot mentor finally.
Right, right.
So I can start working on some of the motions for my ankle, because I can lift my ankle up off of the ground a little bit if I'm like seated on like on a couch with my feet on the floor, for example.
Right.
Or if I'm laying down on the couch and my legs are straight out in front of me, I can lift up my ankle. Or if my knee's bent, I can lift up my ankle, because it's easier to get your ankle to lift up if your knee's bent than if it's straightened out.
Right.
So I can do that. But once I'm standing, I can't lift my foot off the ground.
And that's the goal. And your goal, Amanda, I know for a fact, I know you're going to hit it. I know that. I feel it. I just spoke it into the ether, which means it's now it's already happened. You know, and as for your journey, Amanda, sincerely, I'm proud of you. I really am. It's always inspiring to see your fight, and I'm really thankful to know you. I'm happy that we connected. You know, you can always reach out to Amanda, say hey if you have any questions about PT stuff, because she's a PT nerd. She can help you out with some answers there. And you know, definitely check out her story. Check out her posts, because again, very inspiring, amazing person. You heard her. She's super dope. And as for us, the Neuro Nerds, you can reach out to my tiny ass kicking co-host Lauren at Lauren L. Manzano on Instagram. You can reach out to me at Joseph Rocks on all the socials. You can reach out to us, the Neuro Nerds, at the Neuro Nerds everywhere. Hey, Amanda, super appreciate you. I'm very thankful that we're able to do this. Thank you for making the time. And on that wholesome Joe super appreciates Amanda note, this Neuro Nerd is out. That was awesome. I hope you enjoyed that, Amanda. That was great.
Definitely.
Yeah. Oh, remove that, you PT nerd.
If you enjoy listening to this podcast, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on the Apple Podcast app. Your reviews help us grow and reach more listeners like you.
Find us by searching for the Neuro Nerds on the Apple Podcast app today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.